when I first came to Fontainebleau, I realized that there weren't many women to climb with. And there are, say, 20, 30 people at the crag, and I see two women apart from myself. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, it would be quite cool to just reverse this and organize some sort of gathering that would mean that you'd see 20 women at the crag and maybe just two guys, just to change the vibe and give an opportunity to share beta or share the sort of like, you know, emotions that go alongside of climbing. And from there on, we kind of went into organizing a full-blown event for 100 people.
Super cool.
Hi and welcome to the 15th episode of Bin weg Bouldern. I am Juliane Fritz, and in this episode you will get to know Sophia Reich. She lives the life that I know some of you would also want to live. She's a digital nomad and is able to work online from any place in the world. And in her case, she chooses places where she always wanted to climb outdoors. She's living this dream together with her boyfriend, who's a photographer, and right now they are in Fontainebleau. And guess what Sophia just did there? She organized the first ever Women's Bouldering Festival of Fontainebleau. I have been to the festival, and of course I needed to talk to Sophia about her life and the festival and about why she felt that there's a need for a female event in Fontainebleau. All of this you will hear now. Have lots of fun with this episode.
I am in the city of Fontainebleau, and I'm not at some real rock. I am in the climbing gym in Fontainebleau, which is the Karma Climbing Gym. And I am here because I can meet Sophia Reich.
Yes, Reich, hello.
Here. It's a Polish name. I'm trying to pronounce it right.
You're doing a good job.
And Sophia is here because she's organizing the Women's Bouldering Festival in Fontainebleau. And this is why I'm talking to you now. Hello.
Hey.
I'm so happy that you're taking the time because I know the festival starts tomorrow and you have so much to do.
Yes.
So many people asking you stuff. So, yeah, welcome.
Thank you. And thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it a lot.
I'm really looking forward to the festival and to hearing something about the festival from you now. But I also want to talk about you as a person and about your style of living, because you call yourself a digital nomad.
Yes.
And that means that you can work from wherever you want. And that means that you can climb wherever you want. And that sounds perfect to me. And yeah, so I want to talk about the festival and about you and your lifestyle.
For sure.
I know that you come from Poland. Where exactly in Poland?
I was born in Warsaw and I lived there for two decades before I moved out.
Okay. So tell me, where exactly? Was it in Poland or somewhere else where you found your fascination for climbing and bouldering?
So at first, I really didn't know about rock climbing. What I was introduced to, however, was hiking in the mountains, and in winter it would be skiing, and in summer it would be hiking. My mom would always take me twice a year to the Polish Tatra Mountains, and then I had the opportunity to have a glimpse into sort of a climber's life just by seeing people walking off the path with their sort of ropes, you know, sticking a little bit out of the backpack. And it just was really fascinating to me that they had the ability and the skills to walk off the trail and go climb the rock faces. And that really inspired me. And I first got into climbing with the idea of becoming a mountaineer, which kind of didn't work. And now I do mostly bouldering.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say, why is climbing or bouldering not just a sport for you, but it's more?
There were like two things in my life, I think, that really meant that bouldering could work for me. First one was this sort of outdoorsiness that my mom introduced me to. So I just craved being outside. But at the same time, I also wanted to be athletic, and sort of, you know, I was always interested in progression and just getting like fitter and more skilled. And with bouldering, I think it's very easy to see that progression, even if you're not a young kid anymore. Even if you're an adult getting into the sport, it can be very rewarding to see how you basically get better at it in a very tangible, everyday way. You can see it, and I think it's very inspiring and it makes you stick with it. So that definitely worked for me.
Yeah, I understand that. I've never been bouldering in Poland, so maybe you can tell me where should I have to go? Where is the scene located?
So I actually only bouldered in Poland once, only like 2 hours by car from Warsaw. There is pretty much one rock called Kamień Michniowski, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And there are maybe 20 lines crammed onto this one small rock. But I hear that there is actually much better bouldering in Poland, somewhere on the border with the Czech Republic. And I think there is a bit of development going on there at the moment. But the scene for rock climbing in Poland is certainly more focused on sport climbing. Mm-hmm. And that would be mostly on limestone and then maybe trad on sandstone and certainly, you know, serious trad in the mountains, not so much bouldering.
Okay. Following your blog and your Instagram, it's called Up That Rock. Maybe some of you know it. And there I read that you have lived in very many places. And I think I can't really say where and when you have been somewhere. So maybe you can briefly say what were your steps in your life.
Yeah, so I've been moving quite a lot since maybe when I turned 20. That was when I decided to move to China, because at the time I was studying Japanese studies and the dream was to go and study in Japan, but it just was a little bit too expensive at the time. So I figured out, well, I could go and work in Japan, but then it turned out that sorting visas out and work permits was really tricky. And the allure of China was that it just was less complicated and easier to make it happen. And I had also been studying a little bit of Mandarin Chinese as a compulsory subject at my university. You just have to study second oriental language. So I thought, well, I could work a little bit more on my Chinese and try working there and living there. So I went to work in a small Chinese kindergarten in a small Chinese town for 6 months. And that was quite an experience. I really liked it. And from then on, I kind of felt like I couldn't stay still anymore. And as soon as I came back to Poland, I moved out to the UK. Yes. So I was in London. In London, I was meant to study Japanese and anthropology, but I actually asked to switch to study climbing. So I studied climbing media. And after I finished university, I started working in London. I went onto this conventional career path and I realized that sitting in a PR agency in London was just not for me. So I moved to Sheffield to climb. And from then on, there was France, Bulgaria, France again, Poland, and here we are in Font.
Okay, that sounds cool. How old are you?
Oh, I'm 32.
Okay, that might fit into one life until you're 32.
It could, yeah, with difficulty.
Well, it sounds really exciting, very cool. What would you say, is there a place that you call home?
Well, certainly I really feel at home where my family is, where my mom is in Poland, but it's not about the place, it's more about the people. So place-wise, I think I'm equally happy anywhere, as long as I can, you know, have a sort of sense of freedom. That keeps me happy. Mm-hmm. And somewhere to put my books, which has been a problem recently, and my books have been crammed into my friend's cellar in Sheffield, and I'm dying to get them out of there. So yeah, hopefully at some point.
And you said that you were studying climbing media. Is that really something that you can study?
Yes. So the course at university that I went for was a master's in anthropology of media. And initially I was supposed to study how the tsunami in Japan had been portrayed by the media and how it affected the people who were already victims of the tsunami. But then I realized that actually my passion was somewhat more with the climbing community, and I was already getting quite a lot into feminism at that stage. So I thought I could study climbing media, the way they portray female climbers, and then how that is perceived by female climbers in the community, how they interact with it, and what they want to do differently. Do they want to do it differently? And yeah, a lot of anthropology crammed into climbing.
This is so interesting. I feel like we can go on talking a lot more about that.
It's a long subject, and
well,
don't get
I tried
started.
To fit it in a little bit. I don't know how.
Okay.
Because well, you have to prepare a festival.
That's true.
So this thing called the digital nomad lifestyle. Can you tell me how this idea grew in you to live like that?
Well, at first, I didn't really realize that it was possible. What happened first was that I just couldn't be in London anymore. I was really tired by the big city. So I asked the company that I worked for at the time if I could move to Sheffield and continue working remotely. And they agreed to that. It was a PR company. And very quickly, I realized that instead of being just an exec within a PR company, I could kind of take on clients of my own. So I started doing that instead. And it meant that I could manage my own time in a much better way. And that was kind of picking up. But then this opportunity to work with Epic TV came along. So I decided to relocate to Chamonix in France. And that was great. But again, I was in sort of 9-to-5 office environment. So while I really liked the opportunity to move and to work somewhere else, I didn't enjoy being locked in the office. So I parted with them, which was quite emotional because, you know, it was really great to work together. Mm-hmm. But it just wasn't for me. And from then on, I decided to just stick to being a freelancer and making sure that my work is not sort of constricting my freedom of movement, which some, you know, it's always about compromises. And sometimes it means that, you know, I might be working in a very weird place, or sometimes I might be concerned that, I don't know, I won't have Wi-Fi, or maybe I have to work after I drove for 12 hours from one location to the other. Now we've been in Fontainebleau for quite a while and we're hoping to stay here for longer. But we still travel quite a lot. So like just over the summer, I had been to Sweden, Denmark and Poland. And it makes work almost more exhausting. But at the same time, this lifestyle for me is so much more rewarding than just being in one location. That just works for me.
Okay, interesting. I did not know that you were working for Epic TV.
That was just cool. Maybe 8 months, I think, in their office close to Chamonix. Yeah.
Okay. And oh, nice.
I was doing social media for them, for their climbing sort of department. And, you know, I learned loads and it was a super nice glimpse into the outdoor industry. So I think that also helped me figure out that as a freelancer, I could work more within the outdoor industry than, for example, you know, IT, which was something that I would work with before, because I do marketing, I do copywriting, stuff like that. And you can really do it in a myriad of industries, but you just need to find your niche that you get fired up about. And I get fired up about the outdoor industry.
Okay. And can you tell me how you grew into this style of living? Because I imagine that it is a lot of trial and error at the beginning, because you have... an imagination about how it could work to freelance, but maybe it doesn't work like you intended.
Well, I think it wasn't so much of a plan that I tried to follow. It was rather that I followed what seemed right and convenient at the time. So like one of the big moves that we did was spending nearly 2 years in Bulgaria. And it seems really random, like, why would you move to Bulgaria? Well, we just heard that there was good climbing there. So we were like, okay, let's pack up. Mm-hmm. And we did. And you know, once you're in Bulgaria and you don't speak Bulgarian, it kind of means that you have to work online. So, you know, decisions would be made on the basis of where it would be nice to climb, where it would be nice to hang out. And then you just have to make your work because, you know, you have to pay your bills, you have to keep putting fuel in your car and so on and so on. So, maybe it's a spontaneous decision, then followed by some tinkering of how to make your life actually sustainable. And in that way, it can just happen if it suits you. Because, you know, there are kinks and bumps in the road. And there are moments when you feel like, wow, I really wish I could just go to an office, do my work and leave and be done and not have to worry about a million other things. Mm. But if you can push through that, then this lifestyle might be for you. But it's certainly not for everybody. And I really, really understand it because, you know, I see the allure of both. And you just have to kind of try and decide what works for you better.
Mm. Do you have a routine that helps you, like work in the morning, climb in the afternoon, or something like you kind of try to do every day?
No, because I work with a few clients and all of the our working patterns are different. So for some of them, you know, I deliver one article a month. For somebody else, I deliver one article a week. For somebody else, I do copywriting. For somebody else, I help design social media campaign and stuff like that. So there are so many various types of projects that I can be involved with at any given time that it's very hard to stick to a routine. So I guess my routine is to not have one. And what I'm trying to do at the moment is to achieve a good balance on everyday basis, because in the past I would end up working for example, you know, continuously for 2 weeks and not really seeing daylight, being just like buried somewhere with my computer and working like a crazy person. And then I'd be like, oh, I'm done, now I can go climbing, and I'd go climbing or traveling for 2 or 3 weeks, and those spells would be very intense on both, in both ways. So one would be really focused on work and one would be really really chilled. But now I'm trying to be like, you know, a more of a responsible adult who does a chunk of work every day and then goes to do the things that I love doing. But it's very hard as a freelancer to step away from your work when you know that there is still more to be done. Mm. The work never ends. So that's what I'm working on at the moment. I'm working on having a more long-term plan that will make me feel good about, okay, this is the time where I want to stop today. I'm going to pick up tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I find that quite hard, and that's something that, just because, you know, I'm quite compulsive, so like if there is a project, I just want to finish it.
Yeah.
But yeah, developing this way of working, I think, is very personal. And, you know, there are people who work well in the mornings, there are people who work well in the evenings. I just work well when I can focus for prolonged periods of time. I don't like working in little chunks. So I'm trying to improve time management. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, well, I guess I understand some of these aspects. Well, I guess this you can't stop working on a certain project thing. Well, I, you know, maybe everyone understands that a little. I know, or I heard that among young people in Poland doing IT stuff or doing digital projects or being creative in this digital industry, that is something very common. Would you say that coming from Poland sort of influenced you to live like this, or is that bullshit?
I mean, it's very hard for me to say, because all of my adult life I spent outside of Poland. Mm. So I don't feel like I've got many Polish influences in terms of, like, you know, there is sort of like Polish work ethics or stuff like that. People say like, oh, you know, Polish people like to work hard, or like, you know, they travel abroad to find better jobs and stuff like that. My initial push to travel was connected with academics. So I actually wasn't planning on working abroad. I just had to work abroad to support myself during university. And then it kind of happened that I just didn't see myself going back. And I feel like, you know, work-wise, I feel certainly more international than Polish, which is kind of weird to say, and it kind of sometimes makes me sad as well, because when I try to then work with Polish companies, you know, I'm absolutely clueless. Like, for example, I don't even know how to do the admin paperwork for invoices there, and that's always that's always really funny, because they're like, oh, can you send an invoice such and such, and I'm like, I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. And they're like, how is that possible? Because, you know, every adult Polish person has this number or has this form. And I'm like, sorry. And it makes me feel a little sad.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's very interesting to hear about your way of living. And let's switch to the subject why you're here right now.
Yeah, please do, because I'm like rambling and I can't focus on anything else.
Yes, so let's talk about the festival, because that's what's in your head right now.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I really feel like I couldn't give you a coherent story about myself in any way, because, yeah, festival.
While we were sitting here, you said, okay, you have to leave your phone on because so many people are calling, people that are attending the festival, people that you are volunteering for your festival. Yes, so let's talk about that. You are preparing the workshop, the root setting workshop that starts tomorrow. There will be climbing outdoors. There will be speakers on Saturday, many interesting things. Well, just let us start at the beginning. Where was or how did you get the idea to start this festival?
So when I first came to Fontainebleau, I realized that there weren't many women to climb with and help me grow as a climber. I would be always in a group of guys, and their beta just never worked for me. And I was mm-hmm. like, well, I need to find a female climbing partner. But that hasn't happened for a few years until I started climbing in other places in the world. And then, you know, having spent a few years bouldering and then coming back here, I looked at the crags and I felt like, wow, this very same thing again. Like there are, say, 20, 30 people at the crag and I see two women apart from myself. So I thought, well, it would be quite cool to just reverse this and organize some sort of gathering that would mean that you'd see 20 women at the crag and maybe just two guys, just to change the vibe and give an opportunity to share beta or share the sort of like, you know, emotions that go alongside of climbing. And from there on, we kind of went into organizing a full-blown event for 100 people.
Super cool. Yeah.
And I certainly hope it will be.
It will be.
Yes.
Think positive.
It will be very cool. And if you're not here, you should regret that you're not here. It will be so cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it, really. And one funny thing is we were planning to go to Fontainebleau for a week, me and my boyfriend. And after that, I saw that the festival is going to be in that week here. And then we thought, okay, let's go there. And we bought the tickets. And then my boyfriend asked, this is a women's bouldering festival. Am I allowed to go there? And I was, yes, of course you are. Okay, I'm not sure.
Right.
And then I asked you, even if I thought it was stupid to ask. But yeah, well, how many people asked you actually if they could come?
Regarding guys, there was one person who asked me if she could come with her boyfriend because she really wanted to climb with her boyfriend. And I said to that, well, that's great. And for sure he can come. But I think, like, from my perspective, the interesting experience is to climb with other women and maybe without the vibe that is created at the crag by being with your partner. Because I know from my perspective, and I know, you know, it's not only my perspective, it's sort of something that I discussed with other female friends, and they kind of confirm it, that when you're climbing with your partner, you behave differently than when you're climbing with your female friends, or maybe just your friends. And it's certainly not a rule. It's not like everybody has the same experience, but I know it can be a thing. So to just access that different part of yourself and that different experience is sometimes nicer to be like, hey, boyfriend, you're staying home and I'm going to climb with a bunch of chicks.
That's interesting that you say that, because I sometimes have the feeling that I don't want to like suck at climbing when I'm climbing with my boyfriend.
Yeah, for
That's a feeling. I'm really working on that because it's stupid.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Like, it's like being caught between this weird competitiveness with your boyfriend. And for myself, it's also like I always feel a little bit like helpless, because I think like many other girls, I had been introduced to climbing outdoors, or maybe bouldering, I should say, by my boyfriend. And then it always is this relationship in which I am still the beginner and he is the more experienced climber, even though maybe at this stage I climb more than he does. But that's where we came from, and it kind of lingers. So if, you know, if a rock is scary or like there is a dodgy top out, I'm always like, oh, I can't do it. But when I'm with my female friends, they go like, just go up there. And I'm like, yeah, for sure I can go up there. You know what I mean? So I think in many ways there can be a different experience to climb with somebody who is your life partner and to just climb with friends. Especially if we take into account also gender relations. So it's just, you know, to try something else, to see how it affects you, to see if it's good and get something out of it.
Okay, interesting. One thing that I am wondering about, the difference between climbing women and men, I always have the feeling that even starting to climb, to going to the gym for the first time, it's easier for men, because women always think, even before they tried anything, I can't do this, I am too weak, what if anyone sees that I am not able to do this? So women always have these thoughts, and I don't know if it's right, but I guess fewer men think like that. So it's for men, of course, I am strong and I can go in there and I can climb. So do you think that that is also one of the major problems?
Yeah, I certainly think it's a factor. Like, I remember when I used to hang out a lot at a climbing wall in London, and seeing novice climbers, there was a big difference in how they, in general, approach their first day at the wall. Because, you know, it's a generalization, of course, and it's not that it's the same for every single person. But yeah, I could perhaps make this generalization and say, more women would be hesitant and more guys would just use like whatever means they can to get up the wall, and they wouldn't be concerned, you know, that their face is going to get red, their butt is going to stick out, like they're going to claw their way up as, you know, as a four-year-old child would in a very sort of ungraceful, undainty way. They don't care about it. They care about getting the job done and having a kick out of it. Well, women, first of all, a lot of them are concerned like, oh, do I look stupid? Oh, my face is getting red. And even a recent post on social media that I noticed from a very good American climber, she said that she had this experience of seeing two novice climbers walk into the climbing gym, seeing her climb, and walk out saying, oh, I don't want to do this sport because I don't want to be as muscly as she is. You know, oh. So there are loads of weird thoughts going through female heads when they start climbing. And it's not because there's something wrong with those females. It's because, well, the society might have given them an idea that somehow climbing is not for them. And that's why I think still, even though like there's been so many efforts to change this, it's still kind of important to give women maybe not a leg up, but a bit of an encouragement to say, this is something you can take ownership of. This is something that can be your passion. This is something that you can benefit from. And once they realize that they're doing it for themselves, not to look pretty or not to, you know, hang out with their boyfriends, which is great. But like, you know, how much more fun a thing can be if you're doing it for yourself rather than just following somebody. So yeah, I want to just create an opportunity for, first of all, for people who are new to the sport and maybe need an introduction to that side of it. And then people who are already well involved with it and just need to meet more like-minded women to share psych.
Yeah. What do you think would be a good way to help new people, new women in climbing? Because I sometimes have the feeling someone who's the first time or the second time or even the third time in the gym, you can't tell him much about a certain technique because they think about different things. They think about how do I look? They use their arms too much. And do you have an idea what would be the perfect thing to tell someone who's new in this sport?
I mean, first thing is that I believe strongly in the benefit of getting in the outdoors. So, of course, you know, climbing on plastic is becoming more and more popular and it's more and more accessible. But if you have the feeling that at some point you want to get in Boulder outdoors, don't put it off. Just do it as soon as possible. You don't need to be a strong gym climber to go out and climb in Fontainebleau or at your local crag. Just get out there and get involved and start moving on the rock, and that will teach you so much more in terms of movement, in terms of feeling your body, than moving on plastic. That's at least how I see it. Of course, it's different if somebody wants to go into competition climbing, then it's a completely different ball game, so to speak. Haha, horrible pun. But if you're into rock climbing, don't delay rock climbing. Make rock climbing happen as opposed to climbing on plastic and then having this quite big slap in the face of realizing that you might have been quite good on plastic already, but it doesn't mean very much on the rock.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I must say that I climb more in the gym than outdoors. It's because I live in Berlin.
Yeah, for sure.
But I also thought that, okay, I need to practice in the gym to go outdoors. That's the way I did it. Mm-hmm. So, well, I think it seems to most of the people who live in cities, the better way, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, of course, because it's way more accessible. But, you know, if you do want to climb outdoors, then, you know, spending a weekend out on the rock is almost always accessible. Like, there's always something to climb. Not like, you know, even in Warsaw, as I said, there is just one small rock 2 hours from the city, and it might not be, you know, a world-class venue. It might be an absolutely teeny-weeny odd venue, but it's still touching the rock and it's still, like, you know, having fun in the outdoors. And I think it's an important experience. If that's something that you crave, just don't put it off, and don't think that you need to get strong before you get out. Like, you can be a complete novice and get out, and you're gonna have fun. That's for sure.
Yeah. Do you feel that sometimes you are treated differently in the climbing scene because you're a woman? Were there experiences like that?
I certainly had experiences like that. They're luckily less and less common because we as a community are having this, you know, ongoing discussion about gender stereotypes and then discrimination and so on. So I think it's getting much better. But yeah, certainly there have been situations that you know, I had my doubts about as to whether they happened only because I was a female or not.
Any examples?
Actually, one situation that comes to mind first is when I first went outdoor rock climbing as a 17-year-old girl in Poland. And we traveled to the rocks, we were getting ready to climb, and as we arrived, we heard a comment from guys on a route next to ours. Oh, look, Monty Python Circus came to climb. Mm-hmm. And it was quite obvious to us that they behaved like this towards us because we were the only female party in the proximity of like 20 kilometers. We were 16 and we were just, you know, not treated seriously. Mm-hmm. And we felt really hurt by this. As a 16, 17-year-old girl, I felt really hurt by this because I didn't understand why they'd assume that my climbing would be somehow less worthy than their climbing. And that was in part the reason why I stopped climbing as a teenager after starting it initially and then only came back to it 10 years later, because I just didn't feel welcome in a very masculine community. But I only realized that years later, because I was like, well, maybe people are not that friendly. And then I realized, well, maybe they weren't friendly because we were small girls. Mm-hmm. And then coming into the scene as an adult, first of all, you know, the scene had become much less, like, you know, the gender gap within the sport has closed, not in terms of ability, but in terms of how people are treated. But also as an adult person, I was much more resistant to behaviors like this.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot has changed in the scene. And I'm very thankful that you are a part of this change, that the change goes on, and that you are organizing this festival. And yeah, can you tell me, I know that this had been so much work for you. You've been posting a lot about it. Don't cry.
I'm quite close to crying.
So where do you get your strength to do all this?
When I get involved in a project and when I feel like it's something that inspires me, I really don't care about how much time and effort I pour into this. And I actually started this year with so many climbing and training goals. And then when organizing the festival took off, it became clear very quickly that I most likely will not fulfill my personal goals. And it somehow was okay. Like almost for the first time since I remember, I was happy saying, well, maybe I will not climb as hard this year as I would like to because I'm doing something else that gets me really psyched. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, it's a struggle when I'm sleepy at the computer at midnight, but it's never a struggle in the sense of motivation. I'm always psyched to do this because I feel that hopefully people will get something out of this. And of course, it's our first year and we will only know after. But from the response that we had from the community and from seeing, you know, how many people signed up, I think there is a need for events like this. And I think it was a good idea. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we'll know in 2 days. But,
yeah,
you know, a day before the event, I can say that I think the idea was all right.
Yes, it is. So many people are asking me about the festival, if I'm going here, because they know I'm in Fontainebleau right now, mm-hmm. because I think they are excited to hear what it's going to be like. And can you say, even before the festival has started, what is the part of the festival that you are really proud of that you managed to do?
I think quite important for me is that we have partnered with the National Forestry Office, mm-hmm. Office National du Forêt, probably saying it wrong, but mm-hmm. it's a organization here in France that takes care of public forests and national forests. And what they do is, well, a part of what they do is protecting them from degradation, protecting them from damage, and ensuring that people recreate in a sustainable way. So to me, it's very important. If I'm bringing 100 people into the forest, I want to make sure that these people know how to respect the forest, that these people are going to do their best not to add to its to the stress that the forest, so to speak, experiences from all the visits, because it's, you know, as climbing becomes more and more popular, Fontainebleau is flooded mm-hmm. with people, and a lot of those people come straight from the climbing walls. and maybe they haven't had the opportunity to hang out with people who are outdoorsy people, and they could tell them what sort of behaviors are good and what sort of behaviors are bad when you're in the outdoors. So bringing those novices together, because a lot of our participants are novices, it's very important to me that, first of all, having partnered with the National Forestry Office, we can share all the knowledge from this office with them. And another thing is that all of the experienced climbers who are coming here are being made very aware to make sure that this is almost the most important part of their knowledge that they should share. Because obviously, I want people to share beta. I want people to share which climbs are good for what style of climbers and stuff like that. But mostly, I kind of feel like I want people to share the outdoor ethics so that we ensure the longevity of our discipline in the outdoors.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Can you tell me what your hopes for the future are for this thing? So do you want to make it a tradition? Do you want to do, I don't know if you can think about this right now, a second festival next year?
I mean, it certainly would be amazing. And if this event is what we hope for it to be, I think there will be scope to make it again. But first, we just need to see, you know, the work that we put in come into fruition, ask for feedback from participants. And if they think it's worth it, then we'll certainly do it again. Mm. But it's not for us, it's for the participants sort of to decide whether the format, whether the plan is working out.
Okay. And apart from the festival, what are your personal goals?
It's honestly at this very moment sitting here thinking about, you know, 100 people descending onto the forest tomorrow, quite hard to focus on anything. But I think I just want to find more time for my own climbing after the festival, because mm-hmm. it's taken a little bit of a secondary position during the time of organizing. So that's one thing. And second thing is I want to start writing a little bit more, because my sort of original occupation is writing. And the reason why I went into marketing and to copywriting is because as a writer and as an anthropologist, actually, I have maybe the skill set to perform well within that marketing environment. But that's something that I am slightly less passionate about than actual creative process of writing something of my own, not for clients, but for myself. So I want to bring it back to that a little bit. And that's the personal goal for the next year, more climbing and more writing.
Okay, so I wish that you will find your time for everything that you love to do. And I thank you for the interview.
Thank you so much.
And yeah, really looking forward to the festival. I think we will have fun.
I hope so. I hope so. Fingers crossed for the weather. Let's not jinx it. But yeah, I think it will be good.
It will be.
Okay.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Sophia Reich, an awesome woman. The woman who organized the first women's bouldering festival in Fontainebleau. And I think I forgot to say that this was a non-profit festival, so Sophia had lots and lots of work, and she did it not for the money, but for her dream, for the bouldering community, and with the hope to encourage more women to go outdoor bouldering. And I think that was just a great idea. So thank you again to Sophia, and thank you to all the people that helped her with the festival. You will hear more about the Women's Bouldering Festival in one of my next episodes. And if you don't want to miss anything, check my website www.binwegbouldern.de. Follow me on Instagram, Facebook or Twitter, and also on YouTube, because I have a YouTube channel now. This is new. So follow me there, write me a comment or share an episode that you liked. That helps me very much. And for now, it is time to say goodbye in German. Juliane, mein Name, und ich bin weg, Bouldern.